When Thomas Kelly, the provincial secretary, selected the site for the park, he did so because of the stream running through the valley. He could see the potential of damming the stream to make a lake and have the area as a recreational reserve. To form the lake, the stream was dammed between the Band Rotunda and waterfall, for which the plans and specification were supplied by Thomas Kelly. Originally, the stream followed the west bank of the lake and went through the middle of the hatchery lawn. At the point where the dam was constructed, the bed of the stream was approximately 5 meters below the level of today's path. Because of interest in the construction of the dam, the Taranaki Herald published an article on June 13, 1878, describing how it was constructed and highlighting many problems encountered by the contractor. It was a large undertaking, and everything was excavated by hand. During construction, there were changes made for safety reasons. For example, an undersluice was added to the design. There was a fear that if the dam collapsed, the water released would inundate the town, causing a lot of damage. Following is the article published in the Taranaki Herald.
As the public have shown a great deal of interest in the formation, construction, and the progress made with the works connected with the dam in the botanical gardens, and as they are now completed, a short resume of what has been done may not be out of place and will be interesting to many of our readers. It is now nearly 5 months since the contract to do the work was taken by Mr. Neal, and, notwithstanding many drawbacks, it has been completed to the entire satisfaction of the board. Before, however, proceeding to describe what has been done, it ought to be stated for general information that had not the members of the board pledged their own personal credit to the amount of £150, the public would not now possess as fine a piece of artificial water as there is now to be found in New Zealand. The public are certainly indebted to those gentlemen for their spirited action in the matter. We trust that members of the community will attend the bazaar to be held in aid of the grounds, and be but half as ready to spend their money in the purchase of articles as the ladies of New Plymouth have been in making them, and a large addition to the funds of the board will be realized. The greatest difficulty which the contractor had to contend with was the water. Owing to the peculiar formations of the ground, it was not possible to divert the stream. Therefore, it was found necessary to form a cofferdam some little distance above the works in order to carry the stream by a race cut in the side of the hill, clear of the proposed foundation, about 80 feet across. The excavation was then gone on with, although water was still coming in too fast to admit of the work being carried on with satisfaction. The springs burst out in many directions, the strongest ones at the sides of the excavations. These springs did not show until the contractor had got down about 7 feet, through stiff black soil, very much like peat, evidently the stream's deposit for many years, for it was full of leaves, sticks, etc., some of them being as green as if plucked the day before. The contractor now introduced a Californian pump and found that by plying it every half hour the water could be kept down. Beneath this layer of black soil was a bed of volcanic ashes about 2 inches thick, resembling powdered pumice stone. It was quite gritty, and evidently not wood ashes. This was resting on a bed of very greasy white clay, about 2 feet in thickness. At sight this seemed to be a sound bottom, but the sounding bar disclosing gravel underneath, it was found necessary to remove the clay. Large rocks then began to show themselves, and limbs of trees with the leaves still attached and quite green. Thousands of hinau berries were turned up with shells of mollusca, 3 inches long. A further excavation of 2 feet brought the contractor to the bottom, which consisted of a stiff clay. Then being then down about 11 feet below the surface, their contention against the water was very laborious. It was now found necessary to run a bank of clay across the excavation, 12 feet from the upper side, to the former level of the stream. This being well puddled, the benefit was seen at once, for the water collected behind it. During the remainder of the time the contractor was at work, the excavation was tolerably dry. The foundation for the puddled wall was then carried down 2 feet into the bottom. The excavation being completed, the filling in commenced, the puddle wall being kept about 2 feet below the sides as they rose, guided by planks, there to prevent it spreading. This system was followed till the completion of the works. The intention of the board in the first instance was to have formed the dam without a scouring sluice, but further consideration induced them to alter their plans, and a deep under-sluice was cut on the east bank. It was found necessary to use dynamite in making this cut, as large rocks kept cropping up, but most of the cutting was through very compact gravel cement. 3 box culverts were made, each 10 feet long by 12 inches, clear inside, and carefully laid in a bed of puddle and well-rammed for 2 feet over. The frame for the lift was then placed, the upright sunk 1 foot in the ground and well tied at top, bottom, and middle, and collared round the mouth of the culvert to keep it rigid. A lip from the culvert went down about 10 inches in the solid, and the race in front was well rammed and beaten for about 12 feet. The front of the lift is boarded with planks 2 inches thick up to the top and let into the sides of the race 1 foot, and the puddle is continued behind all the way up, 6 feet in breadth. The remaining 24 feet is filled up with earth and kept from falling out into the race at the end by a rubble wall 8 feet high. There are of course many other little things that deserve to be noticed, but the foregoing are the principal ones. That it was a large undertaking is manifest, and that the contractors have ably performed their work, the proof is its impermeability. We have not as yet been able to obtain the exact information to the amount of earth removed, area of water, etc., but the following is an approximate estimate. About 3,000 yards of earth have been removed, and the area of water obtained is nearly 2 acres. The length of the sheet, in our estimation, comprises its beauty, as it will run back nearly 400 yards, with varying breadth. The total length of the dam across the way on top is 110 feet by 10 feet wide, with a breadth of 80 feet at the foundation. The pressure of water on the embankment will be over 400 tons, a weight which need not alarm the most timid, as the stability of the work is unquestionable. In conclusion, we can only wish that the board had more funds at its disposal, in order that it might continue improving and beautifying the grounds, which are being made a popular resort for the public for pleasure and amusement.
When work was completed, 2 boats were donated, one from Mr. Hurst, which was described as a neat and commodious pleasure boat, and one from blacksmith, Mr. Nickel, which was a 15-foot iron outrigger, christened Lady of the Lake. The board decided that they would charge 1 guinea if the public wanted to put their own boats on the lake for private use. After completion of the lake, the Acclimatization Society approached the board with the intention of forming a union so that they could use the grounds for rearing fish and birds. Unfortunately, the society also wanted to ban boating and swimming in the lake, which was unacceptable to the board. In early 1879, a bathing shed and diving board were built, and the lake became the first public swimming pool in town. Initially, bathing was restricted to before 8 a.m., then in 1886, the hours were extended to 11 a.m. for women and children. A red flag was hoisted on the Cannon Hill flagpole to warn gentlemen to stay clear. Swimming in the lake became less popular after the public baths were opened, but it was still used at times for swimming, until the 1920s. In 1886, the area of the lake was increased by over an acre, by removing a spit of land on the east side of the lake, immediately south of the Poets Bridge, in a section of the lake known as the Dodonelles. 3 islands were formed in the lake in the mid-1890s. The 2 islands on the east side were originally part of a spit of land, which extended north from Monument Hill, between the 2 streams feeding the lake. In 1892, a small part of the lake in front of the rotunda was reclaimed to make the promenade wider. When the lake was originally formed, it extended as far as Goodwin Dell. The first 100 meters at the southern end was narrow, shallow, and full of raupo. This area was reclaimed in 1899 and made into what was known as Manhattan Island, clearly shown on a map from 1913. Thomas Kingwell Skinner supervised the project. The stream at the west of the island was filled in at some point. The other major work on the lake was the extension beyond the boat shed, known as the Serpentine. This was designed and supervised by Percy Smith in 1908. One of the streams feeding the lake comes through the valley where the Serpentine is. This was dug out to form the lake extension. A gang of Maori laborers were hired to do the job, and they camped in the park during the project. Newton King was so impressed with them that he hired them to dig out and create the lake at Brooklands. When work on the Serpentine was complete,